Welcome to Hashtag Finance Master, a weekly show where Anders Leo Lindberg discusses the latest trends in finance and accounting with a global audience via LinkedIn audio. Recorded live, anyone can tune in and take part. Just raise your hand and share the stage. Will you join Anders next time? For now, kick back, relax, and enjoy this week's show.
All right, welcome to another special episode of the Hashtag Finance Master show and podcast. Very excited today to have Adam Shilton with us. Since we are talking about AI and finance and accounting, I thought, who better than Adam Shilton to talk about this? He's been growing like crazy on LinkedIn this past 6 to 9 months, and I'm sure you've seen all the sometimes a bit nerdy stuff perhaps he's sharing out there, but he's really sharing a lot of great guidance in terms of how we can actually use all this technology that is just coming out in free flow, with the generative AI being one of the latest, of course. And he knows a lot more about the tech side than I do, so I'm also very curious to learn today. But Adam, welcome to the show. Why don't you just give a brief intro to yourself, and then we can take the long one in just a little bit.
Yeah, fine. So really appreciate you having me on, Anders. I've been following you since I started on LinkedIn. So thanks for that. You've been a source of inspiration there. So yeah, I've been working in sort of tech for coming up to 9 years now. And yeah, more recently focused on finance tech. So that was probably maybe two and a bit years ago that I decided to align myself in that sense. I can give you the full backstory depending on time. But yeah, that's a little bit about me. In terms of what I do now, obviously I post daily on LinkedIn, and I try and share the insight that I uncover as a bit of sort of a finance tech nerd along the way.
Well, that's great. And I do want to have the backstory. I mean, I'm seeing some guitars and some drum sets here behind you. Of course, we're not going to show the video to the audience, so I'm just telling a bit here. And I could also see that you have sort of a background in music as well. So I'm kind of curious, you know, what is the backstory and how does all this come together?
So I suppose I'm a bit of a patchwork quilt. And when people have asked me the backstory question before, I've kind of given half an answer because it is a bit of a potted history. But I'll try my best. So yeah, I did a degree in music production and sound recording. And that's because I didn't know what I wanted to do. So, you know, I'd always been good at guitar. You know, it was a source of friendships and a source of community for me, playing in bands and doing that sort of stuff. So I thought, I don't know, so I'll just do something that I enjoy, right? But like many people, I've finished uni, I thought, oh, got to get a job now. And at that time, the music just wasn't going to pay the bills. So, you know, I did weddings on the weekend, but my first job was actually selling property. So I did that for a year or so, selling crappy property. So I didn't really enjoy it. But I'd always been a bit of a tech nerd. So years ago, my first proper job, I coded websites like lots of people, did a bit of the sales and marketing to sort of, you know, drive interest to websites and all that sort of stuff. So I thought, right, well, tech is probably a better fit for me if the music thing's just going to be like a leisure activity, shall we say. So I moved into a sales role. It was just lead gen at the time. So sort of smiling and dialing. And that was for a dynamic partner. So that was my first window into, I guess, modern technology from a business perspective. But like many people, I got a bit fidgety because I didn't want to smile and dial all the time. So I moved on, and I won't give you the entire like description of all of the places that I worked, because I worked in a lot. But I never regret the 2 years that I spent moving about. So the first move, I went into data and analytics. So it was actually helping companies find out where they were spending in terms of energy. Yeah, so we'd provide graphs, visualizations for people to nail down where they might not have realized where they were spending. So we had, you know, groundkeepers that were leaving, you know, football floodlights on that nobody knew about that was, you know, costing a load. We had local councils that found that some of the homeless people had been leaving some of the hair hand blowers on in some of the community toilets, and it was costing them a lot of money. So that was really interesting for me because it kind of made that data real. And the sort of the storytelling element, which obviously I know in finance is really important, right? You need to be able to tell that story. Then I moved in construction, helping construction teams digitize, you know, the massive reams of paper they had the back in the vans when, you know, they were sort of traveling all over the place. And then I moved back into data analytics in the agricultural space. And that was monitoring livestock to ensure that the conditions were best for their well-being. So we had climate data, we had humidity data, you know, pressure, all of that sort of stuff. And I remember my first proper, I guess, tech project was with BI. So it was taking data from poultry sheds, so chicken sheds in Peru, it was about 20 sheds, and then amalgamating it into a dashboard so that we could then find insights off the back of that. So that was a really interesting exercise. But then I had the opportunity to move back into ERP and finance software, and I'd always enjoyed that most. So I thought, yeah, let me do it. So I went back in, and the more I learned, the more I wanted to share. So I've always enjoyed sort of presenting, I guess, and maybe that's the showman from the, you know, doing the gigs and the playing guitar and all of that sort of stuff. But that's kind of the point that I started posting a little bit more on LinkedIn. So that was back in the dynamic space. More recently, I moved into the Sage and SAP space, and I was sort of unearthing all of the sort of background of how the tech worked and how businesses were making decisions about tech adoption. So inspired by the likes of you, Anders, and some other people on LinkedIn, I started posting every day, sharing what was in my head to get it out there. Shortly after came the podcast, and you know, you introduced me to Christian, and that episode now, which is episode 2 of the podcast, is still the highest performer. It still gets downloads.
I'll tell him that.
Yeah. So that was really good. Love that conversation. And you know, the vote of confidence for somebody who was basically at ground zero was amazing. So again, forever grateful for that. And then AI hit. And as I've said on some of these discussions, you know, I lost my Christmas last year to generative AI and ChatGPT, because I looked at it and my mind was blown. You know, and maybe it's just, I already had experience with AI, you know, sort of machine learning, you know, in the context of ERP and Power BI with the, you know, data Q&A and all that sort of stuff. And I thought, I need to be talking about this. So I did. And of course, because it's still a hot topic, that's really, I've kind of ridden the wave, I guess, a little bit, not deliberately. It's just kind of a result of circumstance, I guess. But obviously, everybody is keen to know more about AI. I'm still not an expert. You know, I'm trying my best. There's still so much more to uncover. But the more I post, the more feedback that I get that it is useful. And as you said, some of it is a bit technical, but hopefully I get it across in a way that is easy to understand. But if anybody does have feedback for me, then, you know, I'm only direct message way. So anyway, a bit of a long intro there for you, but that's me.
Yeah, no, that's fine. I mean, it's kind of like a lot of people lost their spring break to Silicon Valley Bank, right? So you can always kind of like, you know, those moment in time where, okay, you know, here I just had to duck and cover and sit in a dark room for a month to try and figure out, you know, how's my life going to recover from all of this, right? But
yeah,
how do you sort of go from, let's say, being a user of technology to try and push yourself towards the forefront and being one of those that, okay, a new thing comes out and I got to be one of the first people that I can actually, you know, talk about this in real terms and help people understand it better. How do you sort of handle that shift, so to speak?
Well, I try and break it down because, I mean, you know, they always say that musicians tend to be good at maths because it's all about patterns, right? That is not me. I'm not good at maths. But for me, for me to understand, I need to kind of break things down into frameworks and step by steps. So that's how I tackle everything. I think when I see a new technology or something that I don't understand, my default isn't to resist it, it's to try and pick it apart. And that's what I try and do. So when I see a new tool, you know, something like ChatGPT or some of the latest iterations, you know, Llama 2, Claude 2, which we can talk about a little bit later, I just want to get under the hood. You know, and the theory is if I can break down my investigation and share that, then it's going to help other people, right? So first comes my understanding and then comes the logical presentation of that understanding. But it's difficult, right? Because there is something new every day. And you go to some of these AI tool repositories, you know, whether it's there's an AI for that or Futurepedia or Product Hunt or whatever it happens to be, people are releasing tens of hundreds every day. So it's difficult. Not necessarily looking at what's out there, but deciding what not to look at.
Yeah.
I think that's the biggest challenge that I'm finding at the moment, being on sort of the bleeding edge, as it were, of looking into all of these tools.
So how do you make your choices then? Because, you know, now there's like 10 tools that can do the same thing as ChatGPT, right? So how do you make your choice and say, okay, you know, I can't be an expert in all of them, I'm going to pick these two? Or how do you sort of make those choices?
First, being very blunt, is whatever looks the coolest, right? You know, I'm coming from a sales and marketing background, and naturally the bright, shiny lights do have an effect. But I do try and get into the detail pretty quickly. So if I ever like pull up a tool, for example, and I don't see that it's like SOC 2 or SOC 2 compliant from a data perspective, I'm a bit cautious because obviously that's at the forefront of everybody's minds. But secondly, obviously, it has to have a finance focus. You know, if I can't see utility in the tool for a finance application, then it's out. Or if I see that it's just another me too. So just to use an example, there's probably 1,000 document Q&A AIs now that exist where you upload a PDF and ask it questions. If I see another one of those, I tend to just, so frequency of seeing stuff, you know, I tend to, you know, I'm unbiased, you know, I don't really have any sponsors or anything like that. But that's a little bit of the decision process that comes into that.
No, that's good to know, because I mean, every single person out there is kind of going through those, you know, decision trees or processes for deciding, okay, you know, I, as a, you know, normal user of some of these things, you know, I don't get overwhelmed, but it's only for the fact that I don't look at or know even all the things that are out there, right? But if I knew, it's kind of like, I mean, my head would explode and I wouldn't know where to start or where to begin or where to end. I would just not do anything, right? I'd be sitting here like, okay, this AI thing is not for me, right? Yeah. So it's helpful, I think, for people to know a bit about that. But of course, you mentioned finance here a few times. You said, you know, if it's not relevant with finance, you stay out of it. So kind of considering your educational background and the fact that you moved around a lot, you know, what is it that, you know, how did you end up in finance or working with finance professionals? How did all that come about?
So, I mean, I guess all roads lead to finance, right? But no, I found, you know, especially in the ERP space, if it didn't help finance, wasn't going to help the business, and the chances of actually implementing something were going to be pretty low, right? You know, not just down to the purse strings, obviously finance control, you know, it wasn't that. It's the fact that a lot of process is dictated and a lot of transformation originates in finance. Plus, I spoke to a load of really good people in finance, you know, and the finance community on LinkedIn has been one of the most welcoming that I've ever experienced. So that was that. But I just looked at it in terms of value add. You know, if I do have something to share, who's going to get most benefit from it? And you know, at the time I was thinking, right, well, do I align myself with more of the operations side of things, or I do more of the finance side of things? And finance was the one that stuck out. So that was the decision there. Obviously, I've got no formal training in finance and accounting. And I think you and I have spoken about sort of imposter syndrome and all of that sort of stuff on some exchanges that we've had. But I'll keep with the focus that, you know, if it's useful to people, I'll keep doing it.
No, it makes sense. It's just because you also mentioned data analytics, for instance, right? Which is something we've talked a lot about in this show here earlier on, where, you know, it's a very much adjacent field to finance. Obviously, you're not just a finance person and then you become a data analytics person. There's of course differences there, but there, you know, there's also a great community for those on LinkedIn and with technology background. So it's just interesting to see, you know, how did you end up in finance, and talk about the welcoming community and the great benefits you see there. And obviously, you know, if the CFO is not on board with buying a tech, another technology solution, then, you know, it's probably not going to happen. And even if the CFO says, okay, go do it, then there's still the whole benefit realization part of it is typically something that gets left on the side. And then a year after, people look at each other and say, are we actually better off, right? So I think there's a lot of value for being a tech person in finance, but obviously understanding the finance world is something that, you know, probably is good to prioritize, because, you know, we're of course creators on LinkedIn, but, you know, it's the real stuff that's happening out there. So definitely something to ponder on as you continue your journey here, I would say.
And the other thing as well is I loved giving finance software demos. So I did a lot of that and still do it a little bit, but there was a massive amount of satisfaction in showing something new and almost hearing that sort of pin drop moment where you kind of get that response, you know, I had no idea you could do that, or that's going to help us so much, or all of that is manual for us at the moment, you know? So there was, yeah, as I say, a lot of satisfaction that came of, you know, showing what was available and what could be achieved. So I think that probably had an influence on that as well.
Yeah, and absolutely. Would you say, if you compare to, like, you know, sales and marketing, operations, or other parts of the business, that finance is behind in terms of tech adoption from what you've seen?
No. Lots of people say that, yeah, you know, finance are, you know, the bangers on the desks, you know, I don't want to change, this is my process and all that sort of stuff. The reality is it's no different for other areas of the business.
Mm.
I think, and I had this discussion on a previous podcast with Roy from Received, and we were talking about that sort of the sales piece, and we kind of came to the conclusion that sales gets a lot of attention because that's kind of the that's how you get revenue, right? You know, so there's a lot of buzz around, you know, CRM systems and the automation and all of that sort of stuff. So sometimes that comes first. You know, there's an argument to say that, you know, if you don't have a customer database and you don't have a means of getting a message in front of somebody, you don't have a business, right? You know, but maybe that's a bit biased coming from a sales and marketing background, right? But when you look at other areas of the business, you know, especially more industrial businesses, you know, whether they're either manufacturing or, you know, they operate large warehouses, is there's a ton of people that do the doing in those areas of the businesses that are probably the most averse to change. And I didn't help myself. I had no idea of the industry when I went into it, but I mentioned construction, right? When I was actually physically going to site, helping these people use these tablets that they didn't want to use. And it was such a challenge. You know, it was such a challenge. So yeah, I mean, finance has got problems like at any other part of the business, but that's not to say that they're more behind. In a lot of instances, I see them as actually more future focused in some areas of the business.
That's good to hear, because as you said, you know, it's said a lot that finance is running behind, right? And maybe we don't get as much investments as sales would, but just because you get investments, it doesn't mean that you're actually ahead, right? Because there's also the whole adoption piece here. But obviously, you know, technology and digital transformation has been like a kind of like a ravaging topic for finance professionals for decades. And, you know, the death of the accountant or the death of Excel has been proclaimed many times over. Yet here we are. I mean, we're still using Excel and we still have a lot of accountants. And I think in the US, there's a huge accountant shortage, right? So it's very interesting that that kind of paradox is still there. But if you were to sort of kind of give a status on technology adoption in the finance function, how would you say we're doing?
I suppose my view is a bit blinkered at the moment, because a lot of the people that I speak to are already bought into that, you know, tech adoption, tech transformation piece. So obviously the businesses that I work with, I see a good amount of tech adoption, right? I suppose it does relate to industry. I guess, you know, there's a lot of, say, nonprofit organizations, especially here in the UK, that are still happy to use, you know, Sage 50 and spreadsheets forever and a day, you know, and there's nothing inherently wrong with that. I think the difficulty comes with complexity, you know, because there's a certain amount of complexity that means you've got no option but to either improve your process or accept that you're just not going to grow your business. If I gave sort of a rough finger in the air, you know, how well finance are adopting technology, I'd say is as best as they can, given what they know.
Okay.
You know? And a lot of people just don't know. You only know what you know, right? You know, so it's up to us to obviously communicate that message and make sure that people do know. So getting better, but no worse than anybody else.
No, that's good to hear, because there was a study or a publication by Accenture a few years back, and I keep referring to this because the numbers were a bit mind-blowing. It's from 2021, and they said that the automation rate on the transactional processes in the finance function, so of course not across everything, had gone from 34% in 2018 to 60% in 2021, which is a massive shift. Of course, you know, the whole pandemic probably also played a big role there, but do you see companies, you know, the ones you work with, which are probably more, let's say, proactive than maybe others, do you see those at 60% in the, let's say, transactional space, right? So, you know, getting the numbers into the system, scanning invoices and paying bills and whatnot, or is it still much less than that?
I can't say in terms of percentages.
Well, that's fair, but just your impression, I'd say.
Yeah, but what I'd say is we just need to be careful when we talk about automation. And I know we'll probably get into this a little bit later on, but there's obviously different tiers, you know, because some levels of automation have existed for years. AP automation, OCR, that is not new. Likewise on the AR space, you know, and I remember years ago in the Dynamics space, they were already using AI to capture sort of email information to structure into an order and, you know, all that sort of stuff. So there's been some clever stuff for a number of years. I'd say that if we're saying that the rate of automation is 60% across the finance function, I'd agree if that is with sort of the low-hanging fruit like the OCR and the invoice capture. Yeah, I've no issue with saying that. If we're talking about automation from, say, a robotic process automation, you know, so taking it a step further than just the document capture piece, I'd say it probably lower. And then when we start moving into the generative AI space and sort of the level of, I wouldn't say necessarily automation, but time freed up, I'd say that's a lot lower as well. I am, and you maybe as well, Anders, a Gartner peer community ambassador. And in interacting with some of the people in the statistics there are also some interesting stats. And I can't remember the figures. It was positive from a generative AI perspective, right? So there was some feedback that said, and it was only a small segment, so I don't think the volume of data is quite there, but it said that 34% had already at least started investigating or implementing some element of generative AI as part of their workflow. And to me, 34%, that's a good figure because it says to me, you know, it's not just a buzz. You know, this is something that, people are actively trying to adopt.
Yeah, I guess, you know, it will come with more full of force, let's say, once Microsoft gets all this integrated into their suite of products, right? I mean, that's typically how it comes, right? Just look at the whole AI space for years and years and years. It was these big, bulky solutions. They might look good on visualizations at the end of the day, but then came Power BI and the whole game was changed, right?
Yeah.
So whether you like it or not, I mean, a lot of adoption really comes from there where it just gets pushed into the normal tools that we use, right?
Yeah. I'm really interested to see what happens with Copilot.
Yeah.
And I kind of liken it to, so obviously Excel is the fallback for everything, right? You know, if we can't achieve something with a tool, you know, the tool that we always fall back to is Excel. I think, firstly, from a Microsoft's perspective, to roll out generative AI across all their platforms is going to take a huge amount of server usage. So I think, and again, I'm making predictions here, that we won't get the full power of something like OpenAI or Llama 2 or whatever the large language model is within Office. I think we will see some limitations on what you can do within the Copilot. But I'm a full proponent and advocate of getting it built in, because even if it's, you know, 30, 40% of what you can do with a standalone tool like ChatGPT and some of the others, there are still going to be some wins there. I think there's still going to be a gap for the finance pros that have an understanding of AI outside of Copilot, because I think it sort of evolves it from that standard think about Word, right? You know, Copilot's popped up. Oh, do you want me to, it looks like you are creating this sort of document. Do you want me to finish it off for you? You know, so my feeling is we still might be a little bit in what Glenn Hopper refers to as predictive text mode. You know, obviously right now when we write in Word or Google Sheets or whatever it happens to be, you see the suggested words coming up. So it'll be an extension of that. Interesting to see what will happen in Excel, you know, whether it can actually surface data insight when you're working on a spreadsheet, or whether it's just going to suggest formulas or help you with formatting or whatever it happens to be. So I don't know is a short answer, but my feeling is that if you're just using Copilot, you're probably not going to be accessing the full toolkit, if you know what I mean.
No, but I guess what it will do is that it will, you know, bump up the adoption rate of just these tools in general, right? So if you have to go to a separate tool, you're not quite sure whether it's vetted and it's all these things, right? But if you know, if it comes into Microsoft Excel, well, then, you know, it's probably been vetted by all the appropriate parties and you can be okay by using it and so on. So I think that in itself will give people make them more comfortable to actually try some of these things.
I'm all for that. All for that.
So if we try to zoom in a bit more on the artificial intelligence piece, I mean, how do you see this impacting or already have impacted the finance function? Can you give maybe a few examples of how you see it?
Yeah, so if we maybe go back a few years to AI before generative AI, everybody used to talk about algorithms, you know, so we can connect our data to a machine learning algorithm and we can do all of this cool predictive stuff, right? And that's not new. You know, a lot of businesses haven't even got to that level of predictive analytics yet. A, because they don't have enough data to feed it, or B, just because, you know, they're struggling to find use cases, which always comes back to, you know, you've got a problem to solve for. So my feeling is that with some of the AI we've seen before is that a lot of people don't know about the capability, or it's been difficult to implement, or they've just not found the use case for it, because they can use Excel to do a bit of modeling, or they can use a dedicated FP&A tool, which could have some sort of, you know, machine learning algorithm built into it. So in terms of that, older AI adoption rates were, I guess, pretty low, unless you were kind of like an enterprise organization that had a dedicated data team, dedicated IT team supporting that and all that sort of thing. But with all technologies, we see a shift whereby that tool becomes more accessible to smaller businesses and more people. And that's what we're seeing at the moment, because obviously ChatGPT is accessible to everyone, right? But with, I guess, an ERP slant, before generative AI, there was still an element of AI that was being built into some tools. So we look at Power BI, had the data Q&A, you know, which was basic when it was first released, but you could use text to say, you know, produce me a chart, you know, that follows these parameters, or find me this data, you know, so you could Q&A using text there. So that's not new. Embedded in ERPs, I mentioned the Dynamics example, whereby you could, you know, scrape the text off an email and get Dynamics to create an order for you. So again, that's an AI use case specifically for finance. And I always remember, again, and this was coming back to the demos, right? The mind blown moment was somebody emailing me saying, can I have an update on this invoice? And then being able to click on the invoice number and have it take you straight to the invoice in the ERP. To me, that was a game changer. I absolutely loved that. And it helped me sell a lot of software. And then more recently, we've got more advanced AI that's built into the server infrastructure, some of these multi-tenant tools. And we don't need to get into the technical side of things, but if you are on a cloud solution that has automatic updates, chances are that's on a large server infrastructure, either like Microsoft Azure or Amazon Web Services or fill in the gaps. But this enables software vendors to enable AI within that base database. So whether it's Sage, you know, Oracle, Dynamics, or whatever it happens to be, you've got the ability to start building in these algorithms to the core data. So one example would be we're doing in Sage space. So there's a GL outlier detection. And all it is an algorithm that trawls through historic data. When it comes to month end and you need to do, you know, those corrections that are a pain because you're trawling through loads of data to check that everything matches up, outliers will just, you know, pinpoint the anomaly and say, look, this requires your attention. You can forget about the rest because they look okay. So that's a real life use case. Tarek Munir, who's one of the senior finance guys, you've probably seen him on LinkedIn, PepsiCo, had him on the podcast. When he was delving into data science and doing all of his sort of Python and AI training back in the day, he effectively emulated that himself manually before it started being built into all of these tools. So he actually built his own GL outlier detector, which I was really impressed with. So check him out if you've got the time. And then obviously moving further forwards, you've now got generative AI. And for me, this is where everything changes, because instead of being reliant on a business to use AI, i.e. the only way I can use AI is if I either have developer knowledge or I've got it built into the tools that I use every day, I can now have an individual AI that's working on my behalf. Yeah. Again, data protection, anonymize your data. I'll always say that sort of stuff. But to be able to have something like ChatGPT open in a tab for you to just, you know, essentially use it as a finance assistant to ask questions or to validate formulas or to produce VBA code or whatever, that sort of stuff, it immediately makes it more accessible to the individual, not just the business. And that's what I'm seeing more and more of, is not just the adoption from a business perspective, but people at an individual level to now be able to say, right, I have this issue that I want help with, or this is something that personally I want to speed up. I now have the tools available. So a long answer to a short question, but hopefully that answers it for you.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think, you know, what I've been saying for a while is, because I see a lot of, for instance, finance professionals that want to learn to code and really build stuff themselves, you know, could be the simple stuff of SQL, just be able to query and get some numbers from a database. But I'm like, why invest in actually developing these skills for yourself when we know that the low code, no code movement is going to build these apps and tools for us? Then, you know, ChatGPT is okay, it's probably pushing limits saying it's a simple example, but if you look at the user interface, it's extremely simple, right? And you can just write some queries, and you could probably have built something if you are a coding master that could scrape off of Google or whatever and then give you something similar. But why invest in developing these skills yourself unless you really want to be a tech expert? Of course, then you should. But if you're in finance, I just don't see the idea or the benefit, because these tools, they're coming our way and they'll be coming faster than you can build them yourself. And because it's the best experts in the world building them, then you just can't beat it. So I really, you know, I'm really just trying to encourage finance professionals to say, you know, forget about learning all the coding. I mean, yeah, sure, you will probably get some benefits out of it, especially in the short term. But in the long run, you know, I don't think it's going to get the benefits that you actually have to put in terms of time and resources to actually learn this stuff. That's just my personal opinion, but I'm hearing you sort of at least swaying in that direction. Maybe I'm taking words out of your mouth, I don't know, but you spoke a bit about the generative AI, of course, which is definitely one of the hotter buzzwords today. You mentioned a little bit about it. Can you try to be a bit more specific in terms of how you see finance professionals using this to their advantage?
Yeah, so the quickest wins are sort of general admin that involves anything text-based. And that's what we've got to bear in mind. Originally, when these large language models were released, they wouldn't allow us to produce visualizations or connect to other apps or do anything like that. So it was very isolated. But if you wanted to write a document, so, you know, write me a job spec for a financial controller, you've got your baseline within seconds. Yeah. if you are doing a report to senior management, you know, give me a framework for a one-page summary based on this context, segmented into whatever, and then you've got your structure. You know, so that's one area more relating to text-based or supporting maybe presentations that you're putting together. So that's one thing that I saw originally before we had the latest iteration with the likes of Code Interpreter and some of the plugins, right? Fast forward a little bit, when you start moving into more of the FP&A stuff, and Glenn, again, Glenn Hopper, check him out. He's the AI and finance master. I had him on the podcast. He first created his own FP&A tool with ChatGPT pre-plugins and Code Interpreter. Yeah. And he did that with the massive brain that he has just by taking, you know, the excerpts of code that it spat out and obviously using his own development tools to put it all together. But now with plugins, you could connect ChatGPT to Notable, which is a tool that I'd recommend. Similar to Google Colab, it's a Jupyter notebook, but you can use ChatGPT to give Notable instructions. So very simply, you upload your data to Notable, again, anonymized. Notable is probably a bit more secure than just uploading to ChatGPT, so it's at least a level up. And then you can use ChatGPT to tell Notable what you want to do with the data. And this is when we go from simple text into visualizations. So one of the posts that I did, inspired by Glenn, was, you know, how I created my own FPA and a tool in whatever the time frame it took me to do, is I essentially scraped a load of data from finance system anonymized. So I think it was just a purchase ledger, you know, so it was just months and months worth of transactional information. I uploaded it by CSV, and then I used ChatGPT to do a couple of bits. So, you know, produce me some visuals based on supplier spend, you know, so essentially who am I, you know, paying the most money from my supplier. So it's simple stuff, right? You can do it in Power BI, you know, even in, you know, sort of a pivot chart in Excel, you know, all that sort of stuff. So that's not particularly groundbreaking. But then being able to ask ChatGPT, what would you recommend to visualize this data? And this is the biggest win that I've found, is because we, with our experience and our knowledge of Excel or whatever it happens to be, we only know what we know.
Yep.
Yeah. And unless we're best friends with a data analyst that we can just call up and say, oh, I've got this data, you know, would you recommend, you know, a scatter graph or, you know, whatever it happens to be, you can just say, what are some of the best visual mechanisms for visualizing this data? And it'll come back with suggestions. But it's so quick, you can try, you know, you get the preview of the visualization, you just keep going until you get the output that you want. So in terms of speed of being able to produce those visualizations, we're not into faffing with data anymore. You know, the tools will sanitize and pick up the data that's relevant to the visualization for you. So your thought process immediately is just to, what's the output that I want to produce? So that was a really good scenario. But coming back to what I mentioned earlier, when we talk about more traditional AI models where you've got machine learning algorithms, where you can then do the future focus stuff, I also then went on to saying, right, well, forgetting about data that exists, from the history you've got, can you give me a prediction of the next 12 months as to how you think that spend is likely to change? And again, my data wasn't anywhere near rich enough to produce any sort of decent output. But for illustrative purposes, it went really well because, again, you didn't have to have, you know, a clever modeling tool. You know, you could literally just get a benchmark of, right, well, this is what a reasonably smart algorithm is saying could be our supplier spend in the coming 12 months. And that was all done with ChatGPT tied to Notable. Of course, you can now do it with Code Interpreter, but the disadvantage of Code Interpreter is it's static data. Something like Notable, you could actually feed in live data from, you know, SQL database or wherever you've got that data housed, like a Snowflake for a data warehouse. Interpreter, you'll achieve the same end. You don't have quite as much power, but you still got some really quick wins in that scenario as well. So that's on, I guess, the data and the visualization side of things. Now we're getting to the point where we can actually set context with these tools. Yeah. And that was the biggest gap. So when you look at my guides and my Spices framework, the two first elements of the prompts that I've always instruct people to use is scenario and what was the persona is what it was. Yeah. So the scenario is feed the large language model the context of the query, you know, so you are working as a data analyst with a view of, you know, generating some supply spend analysis, whatever happens. And then the persona is you're a financial controller and you were tasked with all of this, that, and the other. Now, with ChatGPT custom instructions and some of the other bot platforms that are available, you can preset all of that. So you don't have to be anywhere near as advanced with your prompts. And I think we are going to see iterations of that coming, whereby we're not going to have to think so much about the context because we're going to have all of these different bots that are geared up for these specific narrow AI use cases, whereby you can just pick a bot for a certain purpose. And I do generally believe, and I haven't trademarked the term yet, but obviously insourcing is when we use the resource that we have of our employees, smart people that we want to make sure are shunted towards the high value production end of their day-to-day, right? You've got outsourcing, you know, using platforms like Upwork to find people to do stuff. You know, for me, a good use case for likes of Upwork is more the creative stuff, because I still think some of the generative AI for visualizations, especially when it comes to that graphic design piece, is a bit lacking. But I think we're then going to have the concept of AI sourcing. And again, I haven't trademarked it yet, but people will come to a decision where they say, I've got this problem. How do I want to solve it? Does it require a smart person? Does it require a smart person that just doesn't work for us? Or does it warrant a smart AI for that particular purpose? And the post that I did recently used Poe, which is basically just a bot platform. You can feed the context into multiple bots. So the one I created was an Excel formula bot, you know, wasn't perfect, but it was good for a use case. But you could then have, you know, financial benchmarking bot. You know, you could have financial decision sounding board bot. Do you see what I mean? And then immediately you've got three tabs up in your browser whereby as soon as you've got a task to carry out and a problem to solve, you can just go to the bot that's trained for that use case. And that's where I see the market moving, whether it's one that you train yourself or whether it's an off-the-shelf low-code platform that you can adopt. So again, a long answer to a short question, but hopefully that helps.
No, the passion is shining through, and I'm really loving you. I'm loving this, Adam. I said in the beginning, I hope to learn something, and I'm definitely already learning a lot here and sparking a lot of ideas. You know, of course, today I'm also responsible for sales and marketing in our company. And, you know, we have, for instance, sales pipeline data going back to 2019, and then you compare that with your revenue data, and then you can say, okay, upload those two things and say, based on the development in the pipeline and how it usually translates into revenue, what's going to be our budget for next year? I mean, it should be better than we consider, you know, just say this, it should be XYZ, right?
100%. And just on the data anonymization piece, and we'll go on a bit of a sales tangent now, I hope you don't mind. But obviously, as part of my day job, I oversee sort of sales process at my company as well. And we use HubSpot, you know, and yeah. I'm sure it would be the same for a lot of other systems, right?
We do too.
Yeah, good. So yeah, you'll definitely learn something here. So when you export data from HubSpot, what you get is alongside, if it's an individual first name, last name, email, and so on and so forth, is you get a record ID. Yeah. So if you're wanting to feed data into a ChatGPT or a Notable or whatever it happens to be, you can export that data. You can get rid of the first name, last name, and email address. You've still got the record ID. Yeah. And then you've got the non-sensitive data that could be stuff like, you know, industry, persona, do they work in finance, operations, or whatever it happens to be. If you feed that anonymized data into a large language model to get your predictions, you can say stuff like, find me the record ID that this points towards. Yeah. So even though you've taken the individual information out of the data, you can always find it because you've got the original for the record ID. So that's a way that you can tie it back by actually being able to find stuff that's relevant to a customer or an individual contact without having to put their data into a large language model. So yeah, we can pick that up offline if you want me to. But I did just that. So we've got a team, obviously we make calls and we send emails and that sort of stuff. And some of the richest data that you'll get from a CRM system is stuff like call and email data, because the volumes are higher, right? You know, people can be making 50, 100 calls a day or sending 50, 100 emails a day. So before I did the finance use case on Notable, I did the sales use case. And the problem to solve was, we don't know that we're contacting people at the right time. You know, are we wasting 80% of our time on the phone just because people aren't available to speak to us? So using Notable, I analyzed the call data and I found what times of day the pickup rates were best. And then we optimized our process around those times and our levels of connections went up. Yeah, so that's a real life use case of how that could be used. And it also means that you're then less reliant on industry benchmarks, because the default previously would be Google, you know, tell me what a good connection rate would be, you know, or tell me what the best times people pick up the phone are. But it's totally company specific. You can't apply a generalization to your specific business in your specific industry. You've got the data, just use it. And now we've got the tools that enable us to do it better.
It's very fascinating and very, very exciting, I would say. But maybe I'm the only one that thinks that, or maybe you do as well, and thinks it's exciting. So if you kind of were to give a black and white answer, would you say that finance professionals should fear for or be excited about the future of the finance function, considering everything that, AI can do and technology in general?
That is a really difficult question.
Is that black and white?
So I'm a bit scared, personally. But then again, it's because I'm on the bleeding edge and I see a lot of stuff that, other people don't. The black and white answer will be parts of jobs will be replaced guaranteed. But for good people, there will always be a good job. You know, and I always go back to, and people have told me it a couple of times, but nobody has ever complained about having more time.
Exactly. You know?
And that's what I hang my hat on. So yes, jobs will be replaced if you're just keying invoices. Guaranteed. Jobs are already being replaced with the technology that we've got already for people that are just keying invoices. I think for knowledge workers, we will see more of our jobs replaced. So we've just got to think about what are the things that we can do as people that AI can't.
Yeah, and I saw this, I heard this stat that it was going to, let's say, destroy 70 million jobs, but it was going to create 90 million jobs, right? So the net is a gain. But obviously, if you don't move, upskill, reskill within that space, then of course it's a net negative for you. But the potential of moving is there. And that's at least why I'm excited for the future of the finance function, even though it's not going to be easy. I mean, we deal with the human element of change every single day, and we're trying to push these finance professionals in the more, let's say, human, people-oriented direction. And it's hard, right? It's hard because, and I ran a poll on LinkedIn on this some 2 years back or so. I asked, well, why did you go into finance in the first place? Was it because you like numbers or work with business or work with people? And to no surprise, only 10% said, because I like to work with people. But today, you know, because the transactional stuff is almost automated, and then soon, you know, the forecast and the budget will be automated, right? And then what's left is that human-to-human interaction where you're discussing, talking about how can we make things happen and following up with the execution teams, and how is it going? What are we learning? And then feeding that back. That's what the finance world is today. But, you know, and I've gone through this change journey myself. It took me 10 years to change and become good at it. And, you know, today, and of course, I'm not really in finance as per se anymore. But if you had told me just 5 years ago, hey, Anders, in 5 years, you're going to be sales and management responsible for a consulting company, I would have said, no way in hell, right? But that's the kind of move or upskill readiness that we need to have. Maybe not as extreme, but certainly think about, hey, you know, okay, this is going to come. It's going to take in full or part of my job. What am I excited about? What am I passionate about? And how can I use that to take a next step to really still be relevant, I would say, right? I think that's to me is really key. But we're coming up towards the end, Adam, here. So, you know, just a final question before I'll say some famous final words if you have. Do you think there's going to be a time where AI has completely replaced the need for people in the finance function?
In some industries, yes. In others, no. And that's probably the best answer I can get. I think in those smaller businesses, for example, and we're seeing sort of the emergence of a fractional CFO, right? You know, the complexity of the business probably doesn't warrant a really big finance team, in which case some of the tools that we're seeing being developed will act as virtual CFOs. And then you might have a fractional CFO that's a human with experience that then supports that exercise, right? But I think more businesses are going to be able to self-serve from a finance perspective. And especially in non-complex businesses, right? I think for more complex businesses that have more moving parts, I don't think finance is ever going to be replaced. You know, I think there's too much expertise that we've gained as humans, and there's, you know, too much for, at least at the moment, an AI to comprehend. But who knows? You know, it's always funny, you know, late at night I ponder this, you know, can we imagine a world where, you know, we're the tools? You know, and the AI is the director or the owner of the business or whatever it happens.
You know, yeah.
And you know, we giggle about it a little bit, but I think these are thought experiments we need to have. I think the question that everybody is going to need to ask themselves, not just in finance, but all over the place, is what does it mean to be human? Yeah. And I think we're still working it out.
Yeah.
But I think if we can nail that down and then set that in a finance context, and I know you're doing work about, you know, CFO 5.0 and all that sort of stuff, I think we can nail down what it means to be human and have technology support that, I think we're onto a winner.
Yeah, it's a big question, Irene, but at least my simple point is that, you know, tech plus human evil equals more than tech or human alone, right?
Yes, so correct.
And I think for any foreseeable future, that's going to be the case. You know, you can talk about 100 years in the future, but no one knows what's going to happen there anyway. So let's focus on, you know, the next 5-10 years, and then, you know, make our sort of take a stand within that period at least. But then any final word of advice you'll give to all the finance professionals tuning in here from a technology perspective and how they can get the most out of it?
Yeah, I mean, coming back to that future focus, you know, I think, you know, humans are wired for anxiety, myself included, right? I feel like often my default state is anxious, right? And every day I'm having to train myself just to think about, you know, what can I do now? What will I enjoy now? And just focus more on that. So I think one bit of advice is to not try and place yourself too much into the future, because if you worry too much, it all affect your ability to make decisions in the moment, right? So that's one bit of advice. When it comes to AI, or maybe just technology in general, just keep an open mind. And in the recent podcast I did with Paul and Sloan on FP&A Today, we kind of echoed the point, have a play, you know, have a look at my content, you know, have a look at other people's content, you know, Nicola, Christian Martinez, all of that sort of stuff. Find a tool that's really accessible, you know, low risk, and just have a play, you know, whether it's document Q&A, whether it's some of the, you know, more elaborate data stuff that we've been talking about today, you know, and maybe spend half an hour a week on it, you know, and the more that you have a look, the more you'll understand it's more exciting than scary at the moment. It will become more scary if you place yourself in 5 years' time. But for now, find something that's easy to use and just get going with it.
I think that's really sound advice, Adam. And thank you so much for being on the show here on the podcast. I think I learned something. I got some inspiration for things that we could probably do in our company. And, you know, I've been experimenting with ChatGPT for the past 3-4 months, and it's definitely supercharged my productivity to a level that I would never have been able to do on my own. And that's just one out of a million tools, right? So I fully echo that, you know, test it out and get some learnings and then figure out how to use from there. Thanks so much, Adam. I really truly do appreciate it. And I'm sure the listeners will level too. So if you don't know Adam already, go follow Adam Shilton on LinkedIn. Lots of great content coming out there every day on the tech and finance piece. And I'm definitely a follower, and I'm also learning something every day. So Adam, thanks a lot. And see you out there.
It's been an absolute pleasure, Anders. I really appreciate it. And again, for the early stage support, you guys were there from the very beginning. So I'll be forever grateful. So yeah, thanks again.
Thank you.
Bye, everyone.
You've been listening to Hashtag Finance Master, a weekly show recorded live on LinkedIn Audio. Don't forget to subscribe to stay updated on the latest trends in finance and accounting. And why not join Anders every Thursday on LinkedIn to share your own views and appear in the next episode?